Thank you, Frank. Good morning, everybody. Today is the 16th of December, and I'd like to call the meeting to order. Glenn, would you do a roll call of our board members, please?
Mr. Wilkins?
Here.
Ms. Nygaard?
Here.
Mr. Hughes? Deputy Commissioner Burnett?
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Bittner?
Here.
Mr. Dick?
Here.
Mr. Cruz?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. For item number three, would you call the staff and the public, please?
Since there is so many people in this room, I'm going to point to you, and as I point to you, please state your name and your organization. We'll start right here at the table.
Ted Leonard, Ada.
Back in the corner.
Tammy Sherwood,
Keenan. Glenn Lindgren,
I'm doing great.
Amy
Braun, I'm doing great.
Irene
B. Bull Shepherd.
John Captain Cole
Moore,
on behalf of
West High.
Morris Center,
Ada.
Jeffrey Watt, Ada.
Maria the
Sudsville,
Accutite.
Carson Roderick, Ada.
Stephen Klein, First Infrastructure.
Catherine Blackford, Central
Metro. Jerry Jude, Department of Law.
Mark Divins, Ada. Tom Erickson, Ada.
Jim Hemsath, Ada.
Bob Shepchick, Interior, yes.
Jeff, Mark Gardner, Western Financial Group.
Right here.
Beth Stewart, KPMG.
And standing in the back.
Mark Figueroa, Nelson Figueroa.
And Brendan Fairbanks, Natural Gas.
Back corner.
Michael Lamb, yeah.
Dick Peterson, NRTO.
Chip Rogers, Jordan Cummings.
Chris Brown, MWH.
Garbowitz, MWH.
Alan Krause, MWH.
Dennis Aarons, MWH.
Ken DeBerry, TBX.
Corey Christensen, TBX.
Craig Green, Northern Graphing and Design.
Nick Shimonia, Ada.
Good morning, Tim Gallagher, BG New York.
Catherine
Williams, Ada. Rick Adcock, MWH.
Elwood Bramer, Alaska General.
AJ Maikola, Nico Fibena.
Chris Anderson, Ada. Brenda Appleby, Ada.
Quinn Tempanen, Ada. Okay, let's do roll call on the phone. Can you please identify yourself and your organization?
It's Mayor Lou Topkin.
Anybody else?
Yes, my name is Pamela Troop, and I'm with Alaska Commercial Properties.
Jay Thomas, Giuliani.
Who was that last one?
Dave Domansky.
Dave Domansky, Bracewell Giuliani.
Tim Tittle from J.P. Morgan.
Eric Pierce.
Any others on the phone?
Joe Thomas, in case you've overlapped the one name that you were questioning before.
Okay. Are there any other public on the phone?
Thank you, Prince. Before us is the proposed agenda. I would like to offer one amendment to this agenda, and that would be to take item number A, the financial statement presentation, and move it to the bottom, to F, and move everything up one. So we would start off this morning with the dividend recommendation resolution.
Chair, I'll move the agenda with that modification.
Opposed? The agenda is adopted. Thank you. Item number five is prior minutes for November 6th. Does anybody have any comments? Do you want to move it and then have comments?
Chairman, I'll move the minutes to Thursday, November 6th, 2014.
Thank you. Any comments on the minutes? Corrections? Clarifications? Maybe? Any objections to adopting the minutes? Minutes are adopted. Next up is public comments. Please limit your presentation to 3 minutes, please. If you do have questions of Ada or the board, we would request that you do that in writing so that we can respond with the proper folks. I think we'll start with folks on the telephone first. So, does anybody on the telephone wish to testify in front of us?
I do.
Okay, please state your name and affiliation, please.
Hi, good morning. My name is Merrick Pierce. I'm from Fairbanks. I have an affiliation with the Alaska Gas Line Port Authority, and I'd like to offer just a few minutes of quick public comment. My first two things that I want to do. First, good morning to everybody, and thank all of you for your service. I appreciate what you're doing. I know how hard many of you work. Two basic ideas. You know, we've been looking at this trucking idea of moving LNG up the North Slope for quite a while, quite a bit of money spent, and the plan's not working. It's just not bringing gas here to the price that's really affordable, and we can go down that list of reasons why it's not working, but I thought it'd be helpful to share one perhaps new information, piece of information that some of you may not have heard before. I know one of your board members who lives in Fairbanks, Gary Walken, can tell you we have a pretty significant air pollution problem in Fairbanks, and some of our bad air days, air quality in Fairbanks is worse than you'd find in some of the most polluted cities in China. And it's a problem that happened after 2003 when the cost of fuel went up. People started retreating to the old ways of keeping their homes warm, and they retreated to using wood, coal. And what's happened is because Fairbanks sits in a valley, and we had inversions during the wintertime, the air pollution that's emitted from these wood stoves sits in the valley, and we have these terrible air pollution dates, high particular levels in the air. So some of us have been very concerned about that question of what that does to human health, and I've been talking with Dr. Comedy, who's sort of a state epidemiologist, and with another fellow, Dr. Owen Hanley, who's a medical doctor. And I've been asking them to see if we can't help quantify just how many people are dying premature deaths on an annual basis as a consequence to their exposure to the air pollution that we have. And it gives a sense of the urgency of the problem. And we're literally killing people because the air quality is so bad in the wintertime. I'm just going to quickly share a sentence or two from what I received from Dr. Hanley last night. Reading Dr. Hanley now. Quote, I received the 2013 average annual PM2.5 data from Lawn Lavelle with the Fairbanks North Snowmobile from both the Fairbanks and North Pole monitoring sites. Using this data, the number of deaths in the Fairbanks North Snowmobile attributable to air pollution is 50 to 100 people per year. This number is about the same as Dr. Comedy, the state of Alaska's expert, gave to the borough assembly when asked last week. The Clean Air Coalition report using numbers from 2012 also estimates 50 to 100 lives lost. And then, of course, Dr. Hanley goes out to note that this doesn't count for non-lethal illness, the hospitalization loss work for those that are suffering from the health effects of air pollution. So I'm going to be really emphatic here. If we're going to have a solution for this community, one of the criteria has to be that we clean up our air, and we're not going to get there with $8 gas. It's just not going to happen. Now, you simply aren't going to get people, who are burning wood that they've cut and collected themselves to convert. And in fact, the Borough research shows that 58% of those people who are burning wood are burning wood that they've cut and collected themselves. So we've got to do a lot better when we think about cost of the gas that we deliver to this community for space heating, and that's just not happening enough for North Slope. So I would hope that this state would have the ability, and not get entangled contractually to extensions to any obligations or continuing the extensions that we have with a company that AIDA has already contracted with. So I hope that you allow us to look north and south, that we can get going on a project that will really work and really are humanized state. The last quick point that I'd like to make is on your agenda today is a sort of a partnering agreement with REI. They're an outstanding company. I've had the pleasure of working with them, meeting them. They're going to develop a 1 MTA plant that could be immense, very welcome. And it makes important that we start developing that kind of infrastructure. Obviously, the LNG that they produce from that plant could be used in Alaska at some point in the future. But the company has said very clearly that they want to make sure that they make LNG available for Alaska use. And of course, the development of that kind of infrastructure in the Cook Inlet is consistent with the inducements that the state of Alaska has offered to get people to come into the Cook Inlet to drill. We don't want to have people coming in drilling and then having extended resource. So I hope that you move forward with REI. And with that, I'll close and thank all of you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Mary. Is there any questions from the board? Okay. Is there anybody else on the telephone line would like to testify?
Hello, my name is Pamela Troop, and I'm a commercial broker in Fairbanks, Alaska. And I too, like Merrick, would like to thank you for serving. I have concerns that are economic concerns. I've been selling real estate in Fairbanks for 34 years. I've been selling commercial real estate for almost 20. And we have a really challenge here to draw an industry and business to come to Fairbanks. And at $15, I don't see that that's going to be a significant change enough for us to really be able to attract the industry and the businesses that we need to have in Fairbanks. I see Fairbanks depopulating, and I think it's a huge, huge concern for us. I'm gravely concerned about it. So I would hope that we would do something that would get us heating fuel for less than that $15. That's just what I wanted to put my two cents in worth today.
Well, thank you. Any questions from board members? Appreciate your testimony. Mayor Hopkins, are you up?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. And thank you for this opportunity to address the board. But if you would allow me just a moment, I would like to personally thank Mr. Ted Leonard for his work that he's done. I've watched him be in comfortable positions and uncomfortable positions. And Ted, thank you for your service to the state of Alaska. January, I hope, and you get to do things besides, for sure, sit in my office. So thank you very much, Tim. And now I would like to address the Interior Energy Project. I am quite concerned that this project is turning into an unsustainable project the way we're moving forward close to a possible business close. With some deadlines in December, when I have my residents of our community shake their head back and forth in the concerns with what the cost is coming into our community, it concerns me greatly that we may be still trying to move forward through the actions in your board meeting today and executive session, where a project that has high costs and aspects of passing on risk. I understand items. It's not going to be delivering the lowest cost into the community that we expect to get, and therefore that certainly ends up influencing to a great degree the market penetration. And all of those pieces roll back to, I understand that we're competing with burning wood, and I hope to an even lesser degree, burning coal. And what we need to be doing is burning natural gas in our homes, being able to get that out to our residents, the three components of what our community is asking for, the lowest cost, and we see that as a $15 per MMBTU delivered to some aspect in our town. I would certainly love to see that to the foundation wall. The other piece is that to the most residents in the shortest amount of time, and I watched this project move from an estimated 9B plant down to 6B plant, and it might even be smaller being proposed. We have other markets that are starting to do business deals south of us that do and may influence how we put a package together. I am quite concerned and ask the board to seriously consider not moving an action forward past the end of this calendar year, and let's look at what is the best project configuration for getting natural gas into our community as soon as possible at the lowest possible cost. And not forgetting the issue of air quality and try to address that. I know that the state implementation plan that's being submitted soon, it's missing many, many teeth in it, But one of the pieces is that it's anticipating a very large market penetration of natural gas. And I know that if we don't get that, I don't know what we're going to be doing and what the state is going to be doing in terms of coming up with another plan that the Environmental Protection Agency, by the law that's passed by Congress, that we have to meet. So I would ask you to seriously consider ensuring that you look and act a very serious manner, as you do, in an appropriate manner on whatever in your executive session today. I'll be glad to answer any questions. Thank you for the consideration for our community's well-being and health.
Thank you, Mayor. Are there any questions from the board members today? Mayor, we appreciate your testimony. I think we're all looking for as fast as product to Fairbanks at the best price as soon as possible. So we hear your comments and we appreciate those. Is there anybody else on the line who should testify? Anybody else? All right, we'll close the telephone line. Anybody in the conference room wish to testify? Anybody in the conference room? Okay, I'll close public comments, item number 6. Next up is item number 7, new business. As we adjusted the agenda, first up will be Resolution G14-21, 2016 Dividend Recommendation. Ted?
Yes, Chair. Thank you very much.
You can go ahead and move it. Just go ahead and move it, then and Ted can talk about it.
Chairman, I'll move Resolution Number G14-21.
Sorry. Before.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. Every year in December, ADA, through a resolution, must make a declaration of how much it is going to pay per statute in a dividend to the state. The basis formula is 20 to 50% of our statutory net income. And based on that statute, the staff is recommending $17,650. It's been a hard year. Now. And if the chair so desires, I invite Michael Lamb up to the table to give the board information that you need to make your decision and why we're recommending the dividend that we are.
Call for the question.
Questions would ask. I would like to make one comment. Ted, in today's fiscal environment, this is good news. We appreciate your staff's effort to bring $17,650,000 to the dividend back to the state. And we look forward to another good year in 2015. So thank you very much. Questions been called. Would you do the roll, please, Quinn?
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Bittner.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Cruz.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, next up is Resolution G14-10A, Resource Energy, Inc.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move Resolution Number G14-10A.
Thank you. Ted?
Yes, Chair. This resolution is to provide for continuation of our reimbursement agreement with REI. We are requesting a increase to the reimbursement agreement, and I would ask if we could bring Mark Davis up very quickly to go over that. And REI has requested that they give a brief presentation.
Okay.
Awesome.
Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Mark Davis, Chief Infrastructure Officer. So we have a resolution to increase the the agreement, reimbursement agreement we already have in place with REI. This is the project to develop a potential LNG plant in the Cook Inlet area for primarily export to Japan. We've been doing some work on the project with Steve Klein from First Infrastructure. And also, my project manager, John Springsteen, went to Japan in November. And based on that, we think that the project continues to have merit, but there's continued work to be done on our side and their side. And so we're asking the board for a little bit more money to spend on this project. It would still be at a 75-25% split between REI and ADA. So our increased commitment is approximately $110,000, which we think would be money well spent. This project has the potential of developing a substantial amount of the Cook Inlet gas because of the size of the plant the Japanese are proposing and the market they have, which is a market primarily in Japan. And that's what our trip to Japan was for, was to meet with potential off-takers and to explore their interest. And the reports we received were very positive.
All right. Questions from board members? So, Mark, Mark, what's your take on the viability with the fresh oil at where it's at right now? Are there, is this a long-term play in the volatility of the oil market, the commodity market, and the oil business?
Mr. Chair, I think there's two answers to that. First of all, this is a project that will take some time. Obviously, it's a fairly large plant, a medium-sized plant by international standards, but a large plant by U.S. standards. And so that'll take some time to develop. Secondly, though, there's probably a disconnect between the price of gas in Asia and the worldwide oil markets. That's because of long-term requirements contracts that are now in place between Japan utilities and certain other markets. We think that the Cook Inlet gas long-term can be competitive against those other long-term requirements contracts. And therefore, we think it's a viable project.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Did you bring up the resource?
Mark?
With the invite?
Yes. Marianne? Yeah, I'll move over here. Sit here.
Marianne, you want the driver?
I'll take the driver, yeah. And I feel so much more comfortable with PowerPoint this time. My name is Marianne Keyes. I am the General Manager and Vice President for Resources Energy. And with me is Eiji Miyazawa.
Yes, Chief Operating Officer. I am the Vice President of ARIA.
And Eiji, as I mentioned at the last board meeting, is living here full-time in Alaska. He's going home for the holidays. But he is definitely here in Anchorage and just enjoying the slippery roads like he can't believe.
He's learning how to drive on his left-hand side.
Well, good morning, Chair and board members. It's good to see everyone here today. This project, Resources Energy, has been here in Alaska for over 2.5 years. A little after the Fukushima disaster with nuclear reactor plants over in Japan. The reason that REI came to Alaska is the 40-year historical relationship between Alaska's LNG exports and Japan. And they also felt a strong alliance because during the TAPS pipeline construction, it was Nippon Steel and many other members of the consortium group that we have before us today with REI that participated in that project as well. So one of the things that's very attractive about Alaska, just as kind of a recap, is a very short shipping distance to Japan. It's not part of the lower 48 shale gas discussion. And unlike Canada, all of our First Nations Native Land Claim Acts have been all settled, and it's not the high controversy that you have in Canada and elsewhere. Now, there are key components that are necessary for the REI project, and these are kind of, you know, I don't want to call it a three-legged stool because I think it's almost a five-legged stool, and it is the gas supply, it is the aggregation of the Cook Inlet stranded reserves today, it is plant site and land acquisition over at Port McKenzie, regulatory FERC DOE issues that we need to go forward with. Our timeline and schedule is very critical, and I think Mark mentioned this.
Japan is in a crisis situation with their energy. It's not support. They cannot continue to support the very high LNG prices that you have, even today in Japan. So they're looking for a project that could be up and running with gas being delivered prior to 2020. And that has remained the goal and the objective of this project. Also, partnerships and joint venture relationships. This is a mega project, even though we're calling it a small-scale LNG. It is still a mega project. It requires many collaborative efforts, both with the team over in Japan as well as our U.S. partners. There are several critical path components. The government-to-government agreements, those are so very important between Japan. And we have several of those agreements that I'll touch on briefly today. Both the ADA agreement, the state of Alaska, we've had a cooperation agreement with DNR for some time, and others. The Japan buyers, the ones that Jerry Springsteen and I met with when we were over in Japan, are the government entities, the Hyogo and Kyoto prefectures, and also industrial and city gas and electric companies. Some of the potential joint venture partners in the United States would be Japan companies, U.S. companies and partnerships, and also native corporations. We have several MOUs and agreements in place with our native corporations, and as a matter of fact, Chalista and their senior management team went over to Japan and met with many of the principals of the REI project. So all of this is very positive. Of course, you're familiar with the ADA letter to REI, which basically was a formal expression of interest in looking at and going forward with the due diligence on this project. We also have the State of Alaska, the DNR Cooperation Agreement, and that talks about the 1 million ton facility in Cook Inlet. The letter that I think is most significant was during our Alaska Oil and Gas Conference in September of this year. Senator Lisa Murkowski talked about the fact that REI has been actively pursuing this project, that she is supportive of it, in addition to all potential export projects for Alaska's vast natural resources. So what is our project very briefly? It is a 1 million ton facility over at Port McKenzie. It requires about 160,000 million cubic feet a day of gas supply. And we have done studies that I will talk about in the next couple of slides that focus on the reserves and our analysis of those reserves. The aggregated Cook Inlet gas supply, there are several reports that were relied upon for this analysis. The Division of Oil and Gas, of course, the USGS that talked about 17 trillion cubic feet of gas, a very robust Cook Inlet reservoir and economic model that we've developed by a global energy consultant group under Mike Donnelly. And I think that's it. We already talked about the timeline. Of course, Port McKenzie is the area that we're looking at. We would be utilizing the existing port facilities just mainly as bringing in supplies and materials. This project needs a dedicated facility, dock, and marine terminals. It cannot be shared. It wouldn't be a multi-use type facility. Because of LNG being its primary purpose for export, this would be a dedicated dock. In terms of the Cook Inlet gas supply, again, USGS reported 19 trillion cubic feet of gas potential. And, you know, the thing that's, I think, most significant about this is that the gas potential is there. I mean, that's known and that's obvious. But getting it to full production costs money. And that is also part of this project as well. And there's just a quick recap of the Cook Inlet oil and gas activity map. The main companies that we have been dealing with and talking to are Nordac, Bluecrest, Cook Inlet Energy, Hillcor as well, and also Apache. And we're finding that several of the explorers in Cook Inlet were looking for oil. Some of them found some gas, so that adds a nice little icing on the cake to our aggregation of Cook Inlet supplies. Not so much for the producers that found gas instead of oil, but definitely for this project. We touched on this briefly the last board meeting, so I'm not going to go into it, but basically our very detailed reservoir economic model has been provided to Steve Klein and his group, and also resides under a very confidential agreement, because this is very, very significant information that we compiled here. It even goes down to coming up with a price for that feedstock by individual field. So the homework has been done, and now the next step of going forward and farming in or acquiring or, you know, entering into sales agreements for this gas supply is critical. 2P reserves support a daily production rate of 160 million cubic feet a day for REI, and that is after all of the in-state demand has been met for 20 plus years. Timeline and schedule. The milestones and next steps, I am not going to go over many of these up at the top part, but I want to mention on some of the new items that have been completed. Just completed, as a matter of fact, I've conveyed this report to Steve Klein yesterday. KBR, Kellogg Brandon Root, did a very detailed technical cost and plant site analysis for REI. KBR, as you know, is a world-leading EPC contractor for LNG plants. Their report has been provided to ADA as well. We are in the process of acquiring the land, and we are hoping that we could wrap that up in the next several months. We have had preliminary discussions with DOE and FERC. We will continue to have preliminary discussions because the nice thing is until you actually file something formally with DOE and FERC, you get the added advantage of being able to talk to them without it being, you know, part of the official record. So we get their advice and input, and that's a huge positive. The joint venture partnerships are underway, and we're finalizing some of the Japan market side entities as well as the U.S. side, because there's both a lead operator for the LNG plant that we're in discussions with several entities, and that's all positive. Of course, when DOE Secretary Moniz is here, I absolutely love his speech and his main takeaway message. Alaska truly will be treated separately from the lower 48. We're not going to be part of that lengthy and protracted process. It's not going to come with the controversy that comes in the lower 48. And basically, the quote of quotes is getting Alaskan gas monetized is good for the Alaska economy, good for the country, and good for our international security obligations. I absolutely love that statement, and we'll make sure that he remembers what he said, because any presentation before DOE, I make sure I keep it in there. The REI project in Cook Inlet is definitely achievable. It's of a size, scale, and under a timeline that makes sense. And as I reported to Fairbanks and other entities, this project is an export project first and foremost, but what we will commit to and what we have committed to and what will be absolutely necessary for any DOE export permit is if there are surplus gas, if gas is available and there are entities in this state that need it for in-state demand from the utilities, we will make it available to them at the offtake point of the LNG facility. We're not going to get into the distribution business. We're not going to get into the trucking business. Dan Britton's here. He does a good job of that. And but anyone that wants to come to the gate there and take LNG from the plant, you know, under any sort of contractual relationship, we would be obligated to provide gas for our in-state needs. So with that, and AG, do you want to say a few words about the market?
Let me supplement a little bit about LNG market in Japan. Japan currently importing about 83 million tons per year, which is the world's largest LNG importer. And towards 2030, it will be about 100 million tons. So maintaining the world's largest importer position. And the background is that 2011, we have a Fukushima disaster. So after that, about 50 units of nuclear power station has been suspended for its operation, which means that 50 million tons of fire energy will be required to meet the gap of the nuclear power. So right now the Japanese government and municipal governments are trying to import LNG on a competitive basis towards 2030. And also the recent change in the energy market is that total deregulation of electricity business and sale, which will occur in 2016. So right now, as Maria mentioned, that Kyoto government, which is located at the Japan seaside, is now initiating PPP, kind of public and private partnership, to construct their own LNG terminal with LNG thermal power plants. And so, which will be about consume half a million tons of per year of our cleaned LNG. And secondly, Hyogo government is also initiating that kind of a PPP project. So we are confident that we can secure the off-take markets based on the PPP project from the Kyoto and also Hyogo Prefecture.
Thank you. Any questions from board members? Looks like an exciting project. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Here before us is the resolution. I don't have a question.
Call for the question.
Question from Carl. Friend, would you poll the board, please?
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Bittner.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Cruz.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Chair.
Next up is the Interior Energy Project Update, Ted.
Sorry, Chair. Yes, Chair. MWH is here to give us an update on the Interior Energy Project. We also do have the utilities here and have requested that they also give the board, in essence, an update, and they're willing to discuss the project. So I would ask the chair if we could invite representatives up from MWH, and would you want the utilities up at the same time, Chair, or?
Well, in particular order from the board.
MWH present first.
Okay. Chair.
Yep.
Sure.
Yeah.
Actually, I'll sit over here so we don't block the view.
Sorry. And please state your name, affiliation before we get started. We have it on the record for screen. Welcome. Go ahead.
Chris Brown, MWH.
Rick Adcock, MWH.
Corey Borgeson, Baldwin Valley Electric.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, members. We'll provide this update this morning. I know we have some new members, so we'll be happy to provide more background if necessary. With Chair's permission, before we start our update, we thought we would let Corey sort of speak about where we ended up over the last week of meetings we've had with the utilities in Fairbanks. We had a series of meetings starting last Tuesday. And I think we've met 2, 3, or 4 times. What do you think, Bob? Maybe more? Over the last week. So we've had a lot of developments, and the utilities have been working together as well about where we are and what a path forward might be. So, Corey, we just address that.
Thank you, Rick. I'll be very brief. This is one time in Fairbanks where a group of interested parties have really kind of come and worked together. It's not always been easy, but the utilities, Fairbanks Natural Gas, Interior Gas Utility, and Golden Valley, have really worked together on this, particularly the last 6 months, I would say, and even more so in the last 3 months. We've worked towards a trucking consortium that has gotten to the point of a term sheet that has basically outlined how it would work, and we've put that together. We have indicated that the IGU would move forward with the storage and regas, and they have engineers working on that. And we have seen how this can perhaps come together. We've also seen how this perhaps would not serve all the utilities, and there's been concern about that. But the commitment that we've had to work together and to kind of see through those problems, I hope will preserve and serve us well and serve Ada well in fulfilling its obligation or its intent and desire under this project. So I don't want to speak for the other utilities at this point, and I'll let them speak directly. But my board has directed me at our board meeting last night to please ask you to allow us to move forward with this project, to continue to work with utilities. We wanted to meet with the new administration, and we've had the new administration reach out to us saying they would like to do that. And we've also need to do it, according to my direction from my board, to be mindful of the costs and the needs of Golden Valley's member and the communities that Golden Valley serves. So I think what I'm saying to you is that we need to continue to stay together as a group of utilities, seek the time to do that, and work towards the goal of getting this project off the ground and going. So I'll stop there and thank you for your time.
Before we move on, are there any questions real quick from board members for Corey? Okay. Jim?
Thank you, Chair. And we're going to have you update on the trucking here a little bit later.
Okay.
So we all realize that this has to work for the community. That's the whole goal of the IET. That's the reason for a public-private partnership. That's why public funds are put into a project like this, to make it work for the community. Everyone knows there are a lot of challenges to this project. It's a very complex project. Requires a lot of counterparties to come together and agree to terms. We have three utilities who have fairly different business models, so they all have different hurdle rates and structures that align or don't align with the project. And we all recognize the challenges, and we're all working together to make sure it all comes together, because at the end of the day, if the entire supply chain doesn't work, from the molecules on the slope to the burner tip in the home, there's no project. And demand has to be there, and if demand's going to be there, the price has to be right. So we all understand that, and we're working hard towards that. We've had time to start pulling this project together over the course of the months of the last year, really, almost the last year, of working on this project and working together with our counterparties. And there's a lot of clarity coming around where we are right now in terms of the structure that we were asked to put in place initially. We're using this diagram here as the post-closing commercial structure, which means once the deal is closed and we start to construct the project, this will be the arrangement amongst the counterparties, and we'll walk through that in just a second. But we've all had frank discussions. Like, what is it they say in the Rose Garden, after the president and the congressional leaders have met, it was frank and serious discussions, and we've had those. And everybody understands what the challenges are before us. I have to say one thing. When I was sitting there watching people walk in the room today, I started seeing everybody we've worked with over the last year, and I suddenly realized they're all here today. You know, this is the first time I've seen everybody that we've been working with here at once. It sort of reminded me of that scene in Les Mis where right before your mission, everybody shows up on stage. And so let's walk through the commercial structure here and talk about where we are in these commercial agreements. As you can see, we are negotiating with 10 counterparties right now, three of which are the three utilities we're talking about. So we're pretty busy, and we're trying to balance the needs of all of those counterparties and all these commercial arrangements we're trying to put together. And one of the challenges of the project has always been we want gas delivered to Fairbanks as quickly as possible. So that meant we had to run a lot of this in parallel as opposed to sequentially. so that we can meet that kind of date. And that leads to a lot of questions about when are we going to know this? Well, that's because we're working on this at the same time we're working on that. And we're hoping it all comes together in the end. In terms of the gas supply agreement, we're relying on Golden Valley's gas supply agreement with BP. We need to make some perfecting amendments to that gas supply agreement. As we've talked about in the past, BP is now answering the phone. And we hope to make additional progress with BP going forward. In terms of the gas, that supply agreement would go into a company, which we're calling Northern Lights Gas, a joint venture with Golden Valley, which we have the terms, I think, reasonably agreed to. But that entity would then on-sell gas through gas supply agreements to the three utilities, or to the two gas utilities. And I can let Corey speak to what he's discussing in terms of how that would work. But those would be separate gas supply agreements. Those have not been begun yet, just because they would be flow-throughs of the BP gas supply agreement once we get that perfected. So that should not be a big deal. Where we've been focusing our time is on the tolling services agreements. And we've been working over the last week with each of the utilities with draft term sheets for the tolling services agreements. We've gotten a lot of feedback over the last week. We're taking it on board and working with them towards an arrangement that will work for everyone in terms of who's sharing demand, who's sharing risk, where risk lies, what sort of demand profiles we can expect under those tolling services agreements, because those become the foundation, an important foundation of the financing terms that come out further downstream. We've got more work to do, but hopefully we're on a good path here to reach conclusion. I think we're pretty well agreed with Golden Valley on that term sheet. You need to get board approval, obviously.
Finalize board approval. We've agreed to the terms, kind of understanding how it's going to work out. I won't go into a lot of detail why we kind of come to the structure, but it is probably the best structure to make it work. It's one BP is comfortable with. There's a credit risk here, and BP was talking about they provided this contract to Golden Valley, expecting Golden Valley would have the credit risk. They're going to have the same things about if every utility, they wanted to look at different utilities and others for credit risk if it wasn't used.
Can you mute that or something?
It's somebody at the other end.
Can you mute it?
Turn the volume. Can you please mute your phones at the other end so you're not interrupting the meeting here?
I'm sorry, Corey.
No problem. Well, so without getting to a lot of the details of how this term should work out, there are reasons that indicated that this was a good way to go forward with this. And it just speaks a little bit to the gas contract that Golden Valley has with BP. At today's oil prices, the gas from this contract would be close to the $2 in MCF range. And at a $150 oil, a barrel oil, ANS price, the gas price would be close to $4.50 a gallon. So this is a very good gas price from BP. I think this was, I don't want to say a gift from BP, but they really dug down to try to make this work for the community of Fairbanks. So we really want to make this contract work. And we are getting back at BP. BP's gone through a lot of restructure here in Anchorage, and it slowed them down a little bit. But I think we're going to be fine utilizing this contract.
I won't speak for Dan or Bob. They will speak for themselves, I'm sure, later on. They have their own issues in terms of where risks lie, and in particular in IGU's case where the cost of gas is. And I respect that because they have their own challenges and their own business goals that they need to meet. So I'll let them speak to their views on the TSH right now. In terms of the... Once we get over to Northern Lights Energy, the joint development agreement, which defines the terms for investor participation, their commitment, the fact that they'll be taking the lead on lining up third-party finance, and all the other elements that flow through from the concession agreement, that document has been signed and is ready. So That's the first step with Northleaf, and then there will be an equity commitment agreement, the ECA, which will come once they get their investor approval, their board approval, I should say, investment committee approval. The CA, the concession agreement with ADA, is pre-existing, as we all know. That brings us to the ETC and the O&M agreements with Kiewit and TDX, and I'll turn that over to Chris for a second to update.
So at this point, we have selected an operator, CDX Power. We have a contract with them that is, it has not yet been signed, but it is largely agreed to, including the costs of operation. I think the primary issue that exists that needs to be resolved to finalize it has to do with plant performance, and that has to be resolved in harmony with two other agreements, particularly the EPC contract and also the OPTIC agreement. So those contracts have to be in harmony on that pretty narrow issue. And that is what remains. With the EPC contract, we have those negotiations are ongoing. We've been negotiating very intensively with them for some time now. We have a price commitment from them at this point in time that works for the use in the financial modeling. They've committed to that. Precedent to certain conditions that have to be finished negotiating, but the cost itself, they have put a price out there. It's previously that we talked about a price of, I think it was 223 or 225 in the last board meeting. That's come down. It's now 228. The intention is that will continue to be refined, and I actually have
233. What their previous commitment was?
Yeah, the 233 was the previous one. So I actually brought along two of our technical team to talk about particularly the EPC contract.
Chris, when you say 228, is that a fixed number all in? Is that, what is that? What is that number when you refer to 228?
Target price. And so the way the contract has been negotiated, oh, I should give that to you, but there's two levels of pricing, and then there's different terms around each of those.
Yeah, the 228 is the target price, which Hewitt delivered that, the project at that price, they get more compensated. If it goes over that, there is a funded completion reserve of $20 million that is controlled by a risk register. And what that does is, if there are overruns, they don't affect the price of gas. They're drawn out of that risk, that completion reserve. Costs over that fall at the risk of TACQ. That overrun reserve is currently at $20 million. And there's a, like I said, there's a risk register that is associated with the breakdown of those individual line items that roll up to that figure.
It's important to know there's the 228 target price, but then, and Chris just described what happens if they go over that to the guaranteed max, above which it's all theirs. In that delta between the target price and the G-max, that is only a cost. He was reimbursed a cost. They don't make profit on that amount. So that's really not a good day for them. Below that, if they actually come in under 228, they share in the savings. So they have an incentive to actually come in lower than 228. And they're a sophisticated contractor, so you can imagine, you know, exactly how they're looking at that contract structure. So that's an important element, too, that there's an incentive for them to come in beneath 228. They'll make more money to a certain level if they come in lower than 228.
So with the chair's permission, I'd like to invite the two members of our technical team to the table. They can talk about particularly the EPC contract, but I think operations probably as well, kind of explain the process to get, you know, where the design cost estimate is in the process, where the uncertainties lie, how they are resolved, how they're mitigated, and also the rigor that's gone into to date into vetting and establishing that EPC price.
Okay.
So Monique and Dennis, you come up. I'm going to move down one here and let you guys.
And while they're coming up, we've also had the Kiewit price vetted by Turner Townsend for purposes of basically a third-party check on the estimates that they're giving to us. We're not just taking Kiewit's word for it. And those have come in as well, and I believe the range that we got from TTL, and Ada has these documents, were Kiewit's number is somewhat in the lower end of the range that TTL provided back to us. So there's, you know, we all want the cost to come down. We're not happy that the CapEx is where it is, but just in terms of what's available right now, that's what we're getting, and that's what has been checked by a third-party independent consultant who does this professionally, and so they've come in at the same range.
Please state your names and put it up the place.
Hi, I'm Monique Garbowitz with MWH.
Dennis Aarons, MWH.
Welcome.
Thank you for having us. We've not spoken on the details of what's going on with respect to the technical aspects of the project. So if you've got questions, please ask. So what we're here today to talk with you about is where we are with respect to the EPC agreement and what we see as the path moving forward to, one, get an executable agreement and then move forward with the project so that we can deliver a project that meets the overall IEP expectations. As Chris and Rick have said, within the last month, we received a more firm target price and one in which we feel is valid. Is it firm as the chair requested? Not quite. There are a couple of soft spots that remain within that estimate. We feel that we understand where they are and what they are and have plans for resolving them. One of those is the result of a late but very compelling vendor proposal that came in September, and it's taken time to vet that proposal in terms of how to integrate it into the project and what other elements of the project may be replaced or removed based on what the vendor is proposing. And so with that compelling project proposal, we have a reduced long lead equipment price, and we have the potential to deliver that equipment on a shorter time frame than what we had anticipated. And so all of that means that, yep, there's a little bit of soft spot, but what we think is going to happen is that those numbers are going to come down a bit and that it will be known before we actually get to executing the agreement. And so that target price as it is right now, we believe in it for what information that we have now. We believe that we're going to have additional information coming that will help us bring that number down a little bit and have more clarity around those softer spots. So that's why we think we've got a good number, in part. The other part is, as Rick was saying, we've put together a pretty good plan, I think, for providing the scrutiny on that number. We have had oversight provided by not only MWH, but our technical advisors, Nana Worley Parsons. We've had ADA representatives at the table. We've had their technical advisors also at the table. For every milestone review that the contractor has had with that project. And I have been to Kansas or Houston or San Antonio about six times since September. So, and all of those are to progress the review of the design, what's being proposed, get deeper understanding into the process for the estimate development, and to make sure that the contractor, their team, their vendors understand the importance of their project, how cost-sensitive the project is, and make sure that what we prepare and what they prepare, and we then say, as I am doing right now, saying, yep, I think that this is a good target price for where we are with the work that's been done, and that the project is well understood. So with those high-level reviews, the in-depth review, the third-party analysis of the estimate process and the estimate itself, that has allowed us to bring our uncertainty around the project down. I know you guys have seen that trumpet chart, right? Where it brings that down, and we're getting closer and closer and closer to that level of certainty. And this is the process by which we're doing that, right? It's not just sit back and cross our fingers and hope the number comes in a little better. It's getting involved. It's digging our shirts in. It's asking questions. It's saying, what happens if we take this piece of equipment and move it over here? What happens if we, in the case of the vendor proposal, change a process which then removes some elements that then dramatically impact the cost and the schedule as well. So those are the things that we're doing to move this forward. Now the path forward for that equipment, and to make sure that we can keep this smoking hot deal, because right now the vendor is motivated. They're motivated for their own business sense, as well as this project is important to them, for their business, to be frank. That isn't an unending deal, right? So their quote was a 90-day deal. They want to have commitment by the end of the year. And so we're working with internally to understand exactly what that means, the cost associated with that. If the commitment isn't made to proceed, then that smoking hot deal changes. I don't know the degree to which it does.
Well, you mentioned the $228 as the target price. What's that? What's the actual cost? Hard number cost without margin or overhead or profit. What's the
183.
Well, 183. 183. Is the hard cost?
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
So the difference between the 183 and the 228 is margin and risk?
Exactly.
And that's what you're really negotiating?
That's right.
Well, there's engineering.
It's
not included in the 183, but it's really
a critical element. Is that third party engineering or internal?
It's internal
to a key with USC?
Yeah, correct. Okay. There's also there's insurance, there's a performance bond, G&A, and margin in that difference.
So there's no engineering in the 183? No. Right, thank you.
And then that's basically the summary of where we are.
Okay.
And you give us the 2-minute drill on operator.
Sure. You want to talk about Larkspur? Or are we doing
that?
Yeah, sure.
From my background on the North Slope, one of the things that we consistently do on big projects is to get third-party independent estimates and reviews. I first used Larkspur 25 years ago on projects on the North Slope. We used them again on this project, their database for historical construction information on the North Slope is something that that the owners of facilities on the North Slope rely upon to make sure that engineering estimates are accurate. We brought Larkspur Inc. TTL in September to provide us with those consulting services the information that Kiva provided to them was open book, very transparent. They got to see a lot of information that even Kiva considered proprietary. Larkspur report came out and said the plant that Kiva is engineering is consistent with the other construction projects on the North Slope. You know, you get into unit rates on electrical, you get into this, that, and the other thing. So there's, it's a very complex process that they go through. There's some ups and there's some downs. Larkspur said that from their perspective, if we're light on anything right now, we might be light on contingency because of this uncertainty, because of this equipment vendor at that particular time in October. We're a little bit light on owner costs, according to them. And but otherwise, Larkspur has got a very complimentary report based on the process that he would use to arrive at the estimate, the internal scrutiny that that estimate undergoes inside of Kiva is very robust as well. So it was a very good report from Larkspur based on what we'd asked them to do. If I can talk about operations a little bit, we talk about CapEx all the time, but on a 30-year concession, from a net present value standpoint, your operations and your operator are equally as important to the viability, economic viability of any project. We recognized very early on that we want to select an operator, get them integrated in with the design to make sure that life cycle costs are evaluated correctly. Maintainability, operability is designed into the plant. Safety is designed into the plant. And so we went through a procurement process. We brought TDX Power on as a consultant back during the September timeframe to help us with the indicative costs associated with operating the facility that was being designed. They have been very instrumental in helping us arrive at new and better numbers for OPEX on this plant. We entered negotiations with TDX Power to be our operator, and they've expressed a commitment to be the operator on this plant.
And TDX Power currently operates in the slope now?
Right. TDX Power is operating the electric utility on the North Slope right now. They are. This proposal is a joint proposal also with Norgasco. Norgasco operates the gas utilities in Dead Horse as well. And we have representatives from both those companies here today. And so they view our plant as an extension of their utility operating model that they are applying on their existing utilities. And, you know, that's very important to us because, as I've mentioned before, Frank and I come from the producer side of the business, and the producers take a very different view of operating the plant than the local utility companies do. So we're very fortunate to have TDX and Orgasco contribute as much as they have to this point, and we're looking forward to getting them integrated into the design and helping us get ready to turn this plant over from construction into operations.
Where are you at on the issue of property tax?
Property tax?
Yeah, we are talking to the North Slope Borough. We have engaged some advisors who are experienced up there and reside up there to work with us, and we're going to work with the borough to see if we can get property tax relief. Everyone knows that adding property taxes a significant amount to the OPEX has a tremendous impact on the gas price, and the borough is sensitive to that as well. We're hoping that we can arrive at an accommodation that a PILT, I guess, is what we're looking for at this point, negotiating a PILT. And I think the borough is quite interested in the propane production from the plant on the other side of that, so we're working with them and hope to move forward on that that issue, because it's a really critical one that will have a serious impact on the gas price. And so many of them are the CapEx and OpEx as well, too. So that's an issue that we're diving into with them.
So in your modeling, are you using a number that's reasonable, do you think?
Yeah, we think we think it could be as low. Well, maybe I'll hold on where we think the range is, but the number that we're using in the model, I would say, it's not the lowest, but it's the lower end of the range. Although the upper end of the range is one that it would just undermine the project. So we think we're using a reasonable number now. It could, but we freely admit, and you know, our Dan and Bob know as well, it could go up. So that's an important issue to get nailed down. And like I said, we're working on it along with all the others.
Okay. Gary?
Well, just for the record, we have a different opinion. This, what's in the model is $1 million a year, and if you did it under the today's North Slope Borough tax structure is $4.3 million. So the swing in that, as Rick correctly has said, is 70 cents on liquefaction. So we're using $1 million. We shouldn't be using $1 million.
We can happily correct that.
I just want to make sure that when you say that, well, we're using the correct number, in my opinion, it's not the correct number, and that you're exactly right, that it has a lot to do with liquefaction and, at the end, the meter price to the customers.
Couldn't agree more. And if I came across the thing, it was the correct number. I don't know what the correct number is. I want to be clear about that. I know what we'd like to drive it to make the project viable.
So with that hanging out there as a issue that has not been brought to the finish line, how do you? And this is maybe a general question for maybe a later date, but how do you get to a number in order to visit with the utilities on what their costs are going to be?
We get to a model, basically, and a framework is what is the only certain thing here. And then the input parameters to that are what we then debate about and see what the output's going to be from there. In terms of getting to a certain number for the utilities with their TSAs, and I understand the question, we discussed that many times before here, we don't have that number yet because, you know, we just talked about there's some issues in the CapEx that need to be nailed down. North Slope Borough taxes, gas price ultimately, et cetera, et cetera. But those are the ranges on the uncertainty of those are coming down. I'd say that the tax issue's probably got the biggest swing, potential swing. But the others, that's what's happened throughout this process, to be able to narrow the range of uncertainty around those input parameters. And then we sit around and model. And that's what we do with Dan and Bob and with Corey. When we get into these meetings, that's 4 hours of modeling sessions to put in other different inputs and agree, disagree. You know, no, we're not here to disagree with what the truth is. We're here to arrive at a consensus about what the right approach is. And then with the TSAs, you know, you're negotiating terms around which, you know, eventually you've got to put a price in there, but you can make progress in negotiating the terms prior to having the final price, as long as it comes within a range that people are comfortable with. And I'll end with this. We're fully aware that the range we're at right now, you know, as much diligence has been done on the CapEx is, you know, solid as the process is, et cetera, the price is too high. You know, we've got to get the price down. And so we're walking through where we are after the work that we've done, but not asserting that we've gotten to the price that any of us want to see to make this project viable.
Okay.
Oh, one other thing. We made a mistake. Engineering is included in that 185.
Okay. 183.
Yeah, actually, it's...
Yep.
183.
Okay. That's what I wrote down.
Yeah, yeah.
This was yes.
I just
got
it.
You subtract the two to get to 28.
Got it. Okay. We're doing the math down here real fast.
All right. So I guess, are there any questions from MWH crew up here before we ask the utilities to come up?
Oh, we had a couple of other quick things.
Okay.
If, one was to give a trucking update, but we could defer that because I think Corey's going to provide most of that. And then the other was just to talk about the current price we're coming up with and what's behind that, and you know where.
Well,
we
I think both are pretty critical. So the trucking, you know, so we look forward to an update on that and then the price. So.
Okay. Maybe a quick trucking update.
Well, maybe can we defer the trucking until Dan and Bob are up here because we've been working on it together and.
Okay.
We can speak together on that.
Okay.
That works.
And then you say the price?
Yeah, we can work on that for a quick second.
All right.
Everybody wants to talk about that.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I would also say that we were joined just a few ago by our CEO, Alan Krauss, who's here with us today. Okay, so to talk about the price, we're going to go into it, but I want to do a little exercise, if you guys would indulge me. The five parts of the supply chain, trying to write big, but you've got the gas, the liquefaction, the trucking, storage and regas, and distribution. So you have five components of that supply chain. And let's just look at what we've got real briefly, because, and the only reason I'm putting this out is because as we try to find a path forward to get to the right price that works for IGU, that works for FNG, that works for Golden Valley, we have to understand what the starting point is. The gas price is going to be indexed to oil, so you can it's going to fluctuate. But if we look at it in today's terms, we have in today's terms, it'd be about closer to $2. But let's say that we're using a more reasonable, I think, 7-year DNR forecast would get us at $2.75 on the gas price. So let's start with that. Then you have to add the fuel gas to that, which brings, it's about 10% addition, because that's what you're going to use to power the plant. So you've got to buy 110% of the fuel that you're going to be selling. And then there will be a small administrative fee in between of about 2%, so call it $3.09 on the gas. Now let's truck that. We've done multiple studies on it. You know, there's definitely some uncertainties and some potential swings, but $5, I think, is where most people think is a reasonable number for right now. I'm going to look over at my colleagues as well.
Well, diesel's down, so today that may be right.
Exactly. And we put that lower-cost diesel into the model. We react quicker than the gas station. Okay, so now we're at $8. Storage and regas, $1. $1 for storage and regas. We're at $9. Distribution, well, you know, the cost of quote-unquote distribution will be different for all three. For Golden Valley, it's the wires are there. For FNG, there's pipeline in the ground. Dan is expanding his network. He's got more to build, and it's going to cost and take investment. And with Bob, they have yet to lay the pipe. And so let's do it two ways. One is if you don't have a lot of sets of money, it's more like $6.50. If you do, it's more like $4. So if, you know, if everything from the plant came into the distribution, that would be $4 adder to where we were, which was $9. Now we're at 13. If you don't put all the sets of money into it, you add $2.50 more. So now we're at $15.50. We haven't even added the liquefaction plant yet. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're talking about here, is the liquefaction plant. So to make a $15 goal, that's got to be a really efficient, cheap liquefaction plant. And I only say that so that we all know sort of the structural challenge that we have here to making some of the price goals, which we all share. But that's, you know, that's an important benchmark.
And what is your liquefaction cost?
Okay, so that depends on your input assumptions, and we will have lots more discussions about them, and I'm going to put a number out from our latest base case analysis, which has several assumptions in it that move in favor of the plant, which I'm sure we would all be skeptical about, but it sort of gives you, if everything worked out just right, you know, I was going to say $4.93 because that's what the model said, but let's call it $5. It could go up, you know, if certain things don't work out right. If, you know, if we have a construction overrun and we can't recycle the $20 million of construction completion reserve into the plant, which is what we're assuming at that price I just gave you, among other things. So, you know, you can do the math, and I should have written it down, so you can probably tell me what we got to at the burner tip there. But really we need to get, if we're going to meet a lower price goal, we've got to get a radically lower priced plant. And we're starting to run it. I mean, everyone can have an opinion about whether the CapEx is appropriate and whether you can get a cheaper plant out there. But I think if you even got the best possible scenario, you're still going to be challenged with this structure. So with that said, I just wanted to say that what we came away with yesterday after a week of discussions with the utilities is we've done a lot of work now. We understand this project inside out. We've got to get more creative. We've got to look at ways to lower the cost of capital, which may mean shifting state money around, maybe taking advantage of ADA bonds. You know, we can talk about that. And we've got to find any other opportunity we can to reduce CapEx and OPEX. So cost of capital, CapEx and OPEX, that's what it's going to take. Gas price is probably not going to be improved. It's a good contract, as Corey said.
So Jim, based on, I'm counting up 18 for a low to $20.50 for a high.
Yeah, if I can catch up with your numbers, I gave you, for the gas, it's 3.
Well, I just added that. So it's 18 to $20.50. So could you relate that to the price of oil? What does that mean for home heating oil? What is it? If it was $18, what would oil have to be to match it? Or if it was $20.50 for MCF, what would oil have to be to match it? Heating oil.
I can't make that correlation. I mean, I could do it with oil, but I'm maybe Dan would do this every day.
$2.40 a gallon.
$2.40 a gallon?
Yeah.
Okay, at 18? And $20.50.
$2.70
a gallon?
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing, Chair, the gas price I gave you to get you to the $3 start or wherever that was assuming $90-ish a barrel oil. If you had today's oil price, the way that we'd be paying for gas, you would knock 70 cents off of the bottom line number that you have there. The gas would have been 70 cents cheaper.
Okay, yes, today.
Today, yes.
So you're 17 and a quarter to
exactly.
$20.
Okay. Yeah, instead of $3 gas, you've got $2
and what is the price of oil today?
About $55.
No. Heating oil. What's the delivered heating oil price in Fairbanks?
$3.07.
That's an anomaly. Gary got a good view on it.
I got the
input. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Based on our survey, it's still 340, but it's dropping pretty quickly as the rack price.
$25.
We anticipate that to continue to drop rapidly over the next number of weeks.
So on the low end, we're roughly 75 cents to a dollar within oil, which is, and then on the high end, we're about 50 cents to 75 cents within the oil.
Based on current crude prices, so the Alaskan heating oil market is lacking crude, and it's going to catch up, I think. So we have a temporary lag in the heating oil price that doesn't correlate as normally would with current crude prices.
Mm-hmm.
The normal correlation with current crude prices to put heating oil below $3 a gallon, and it's somewhere around the 270 range. It's just taking a while to get there.
Okay. I just wanted to get it apples to apples here.
So I would say another thing, and I know that, you know, it's a circular discussion when you want to know. We showed you tornado diagrams earlier in some of the previous discussions where we create these bars and we show what element of the supply chain or the contract has the most effect on the gas price. Number one, demand. Number two was OPEX. Three was CAPEX. And raw gas is penny for penny. And then we get down to the cost of capital below that. So we need to know demand to come up with a price, but the buyer needs to know the price to come up with demand. You know, so we're sort of narrowing in on that. The numbers we just gave you were based on Golden Valley having a 5B commitment, and then in the TSAs, the two gas utilities having what they're able to commit to, but not what actually their demand might be. So
So Golden Valley's a 5B?
Say it's a 5B for 10 years-ish. I mean, just for discussions now. Uh-huh. And then the two gas utilities were willing to commit, but it's less than their demand, what they expect their demand to be. But if we stay with what their commitment is, just from my head, FNG was started at 0.1B and grew by 0.1B per year until you got to 1.2B in year 12. I did that math right. starting at 0.1 and then growing 0.1 per year. So we've got about, in year 10, we've got about 5 from Golden Valley, 1.2 committed from FNG, so now we're at 6.2. And then for FNG, it starts out at 0 the first year, then it's 0.6-ish year 2, and then it grows from there to, or 0.06-ish, and then it grows in year 10 to about 0.6. So year 2 is 0.06, and it grows to 0.6. So now we're at 1.8. We've got about 6.8 of total demand in year 10 on a 6D plant.
So basically, the volume is GVA.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now that's not what the gas utilities expect their demand to be. I'm gonna keep looking over until one of them gives me an icy stare, and I know I said something wrong, but. Your stare is always in the icy Dan.
Well, from a commercial commitment, you have to go based on
precisely
what they're going to do.
Yes, and we have to go with what would be in the TSA, whether it's commitment or demand. The lenders, the investors don't care. It's whatever that number is, that's what they finance on. And so that's the demand we have to finance on. What is a legitimate argument from these utilities, the gas utilities, is that if and using that curve that I just gave you, because the gas utilities are such a small piece of that, and because we'll probably have 15% excess production in the plant in the winter because of the thermodynamics of its operation, and it needs to meet that peak anyway, which is convenient, we think there's enough storage to accommodate that level without having to add storage. So we could run level in the plant. We wouldn't have seasonal swings. If their demand was greater in reality, that would start to introduce a seasonal swing issue, which would lower the amount of total demand you could serve from the capacity of the plant, because you need that extra buffer for that peaking in the wintertime. So that would affect the gas price legitimately. So this pricing is just off of commitment, and that recognizing that very low demand from the gas utilities.
Corey,
can I add? You know, this is certainly an evolving project, and it's been evolving for Golden Valley. We have seen some things evolve that we like. We understand we will not have a CapEx risk. We will not have an OpEx risk. Some of the things that we demanded were there. We got a much higher price, getting those risks taken away from us. What risk has remained up there is the demand risk, or the capacity risk, I call it, that the customers will come for this gas. And if the customers don't come, someone's got to pay for this plant up on the slope. That's the reality of it. So what has occurred over the last 30 days is our oil prices have dropped. The gas utilities are concerned about, even more concerned about the conversion rates. So they're concerned the high price of our LNG is going to slow down their conversion rates. And now they're concerned that the lower cost of heating oil is going to slow down their conversion rates. And their commitment to this project in a take or toll or pay, they're being cautious, and I respect that. So, subject to my board agreeing to it, which they still will have to deliberate, we have proposed that Golden Valley would take that risk. And we have modeled it, and if we take that risk, we still believe there is a substantial savings to our members. But we hear that the utilities are still concerned about the high price, and locking in a high price will thwart this long-term success of this project. So we need to get to the right place here. We have modeled that we need 2.8 B of gas for our plants, and we expect it's going to go down in 4 years when one of our largest customers stops or refines its mining process. And in some respects, that's perfect. As our demand drops, the gas utilities demand increases, and we cross, and it seems like it could really fit very well. So what we would have to be doing basically is paying a higher price for in the early years for our gas until that demand capacity meets. And if it doesn't meet, we are taking on a risk that it doesn't meet.
So Corey, with this risk, and the sharing of the risk, or the divvying up whatever risk there is based on demand, it would not be any different whether oil was coming from the North Slope, from Cook Inlet, from BC, or wherever. It's still the same concern because of the price of conversion and the price of oil presently.
I would say that is a fair statement.
Okay.
So that's, and I want to say I don't think the way it's kind of ended up here in the last week that there is much sharing of the risk. It's on the Golden Valley Utility.
I'm trying to give them a little credit.
there's a little bit that they'll step up and say we will pay even if we don't need it for.
Uh-huh.
But it's not a big amount, and that's always been my understanding of the problem of this project from day one. And trust me, I've tried everything I can do to put that risk on Ada.
Look at you,
we have pushed very hard to put that risk on Ada. I pushed very hard to make sure we all shared that risk, and it really comes down to who can still make this project work with a little bit higher cost for the fuel. And perhaps Golden Valley can, but I want to say I'm here in public and I'm being heard by many on the phone. My board is going to have to also sign off on this and get comfortable with this. And we're going to have to look at our modeling and make sure that the statement that we can afford to still have savings to our members taking on this risk works.
And I want to say that we are in no way criticizing a low demand commitment from the gas utilities. We totally understand. You know, it's their business that they've got to manage, and we understand their risks. I'd do the same thing if I were in their position. Dan's got people, big consumers on his network that have the ability to switch to a different fuel because they still got that capability of dual fuel use, and so they could turn him off and move to a different fuel based on the economics of it, and that could take a huge amount of load off of the system. And Bob is, he's got the biggest challenge of anybody in this room of building out a distribution network with very limited resources. And what is it, 800 square miles and how many customers?
12,607 miles of pipe.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I'm totally sympathetic to this. But then you get back to how do you finance the plants, and you've got to know what your demand is so that the lenders and investors can determine, if you've got the cash flows to support their investment.
Any questions from Jim?
Well, I just want to go back to Corey's statement about the gas contract. This has been a source of frustration for all of us, not just this board, but this project. And it is beyond me to understand why it has taken this long. And just put this in perspective. The North Slope oil and gas fields handle 8 billion cubic feet a day. They have to process, put it back into the ground. 8 billion cubic feet. We're asking for 6 billion cubic feet per year. So we have spent 8 months of, I'm trying to be kind, we have spent 8 months of dithering by BP, and we still don't have a contract. And we're 2 weeks from the end of this thing. So I say, if this is the kind of partner that we're dealing with, a partner that hangs us out for 8 months, quibbling over not 2%, not 0.2%, not 0.02%, the 0.002% of what they handle on that on the slope every year. 0.002%. I'm not interested in crawling a better thing. You know, what's going to be coming down the pike later when they've got us by the, when they have us in a compromising position? And I think that that's just one of the frustrations that I have. And do we have a tap off of the line yet? No, that's out. Somebody's out in the mothership is voting on that. Have we decided who's going to take the supply risk? No, haven't done that. All these things, right at the beginning of this project, before we even get to the flange to get it down the highway, all these things, you just look at this component right here, and there are so many pieces out there with obviously a partner that doesn't want to dance. I'm saying, wait a minute, they don't have to dance in 8 months. What makes me think they're going to dance in the next 2 weeks? So I just worry, bless your heart. You know, I think the world of you. In my presence, don't ever say this is a gift from BP. Or convince me it's a gift, and then we're going to be okay. Thank you.
Well, we do have a gas contract with BP. All right, so there is a gas contract with BP. I'll tell you, I think there's somebody in this room that told me they spent 8 years trying to get a gas contract with BP on the slope and wasn't able to get it. Ada did not want to use Golden Valley's gas contract. They instructed their staff to go out and get another gas contract. Created confusion at BP. A little angst. The governor's calling BP. There's the world's changed for BP. I don't know, I can tell you lots of things. You know, they've now got a contract to sell gas at $2 an MCF, and they're going to want to, I'm going to take our gas and send it down a pipeline and send it off to some Asian market. They gave us, and I call it a gift, they entered into a contract that I don't think they normally would have done. I don't think it's big enough for them, and I speculate all day long why we're going to do this. And then BP hears mixed signals. We don't want Golden Valley's gas contract. We're going to get our own. And I sat back. I was quiet. I said, but I was thinking, well, good luck, Ada, with that. And I think the stars and the moons and everything aligned, and we happen to get this gas contract. I don't think that's going to happen again in 100 years. So we have got to use this gas contract, and we want it, I call it tweaked. I think BP wants some things tweaked. I think they've got some things. And now we're negotiating. We're working on that, and I'm talking about it in public here. But we are working on it, and I sense BP is engaged on this again now. I think they're hoping this project's going to go away. If we stop talking, this project might go away. Let's see who gets elected governor, it's a valuable contract, I believe, and I think we need to use it. And if not, there might be an Exxon contract with us.
Just for the record, and Jerry may remember, but back in the prior life, I remember testimony that it cost the operators $2 a B to handle that $8 billion a day. And I asked that question, and that was in the last few months, and it was confidential. But I remember that from the prior time. So I'll just put that on the record, and if I'm wrong, somebody needs to correct me. Yeah. So actually, it's a gift that we take our little puny 6 feet. I'm dead serious.
Well, there's 23 available under the contract. We might be able to find something else to do with it. Benefit the whole project. That's my best answer to you. We do have a contract, and I've sent messages to BP. We have a contract. We're going to use it the way it is, and you've got to work with us. And they've called back.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, Jim, I think it's time to hear from utilities.
Thank you.
I'm not going for a fish.
Well, it's a good
welcome.
Thank you.
So I'll let whoever wants to lead, lead.
I'll go. And I'll take you back to 2 points at ADA board meetings. One in the spring of 13 when Senate Bill 23 was being passed. And I think Senator Wilson might be the only one that was on that board meeting in Fairbanks. And I came to the board under public comment and suggested that this project was coming forward. You were going to have to look at it. It was going to be a financially challenging project. And that the end goal that the board needed to keep in mind was, what's the cost of gas to the residents and businesses? Because the intent of the project isn't to save people 10% on their electric bill or to save them 40 cents on their fuel bill. It's to fundamentally change the impact of $4 diesel on the entire economy of the interior. And to do that, you need low-cost gas, you need distribution broadly throughout the community, and you need pricing at a point that both accomplishes that and gets a high conversion rate. And said, well, as you work this project, there will be financial challenges all the way along, and that's what I needed you to keep looking at. And I think you probably remember that discussion. It was at the UAF Board of Regents meeting. So January 14 is the other one I'll take you to, a year ago. And in the board memo to the board, there was an outline of the projects that were being considered, the recommendation to MWH that Corey and I both wrote letters in support of, that looked at a 90 plant in the $170 to $190 million range, a timeline of the fourth quarter of 15, and the expectation that this way this partnership would be structured would then also allow for lower cost distribution to let us hit those goals. Well, today, even as of today, we're not allowed to publicly talk about what that price might be on what's now a 6B plant. Our timeline is the end of the third quarter. And really, in order to come up with pricing that could be shared publicly, I prepared an analysis for the assembly that put the target to town at about 14 and the target to the home at about 20 in November, which is very similar to the numbers you heard today.
Mm-hmm.
And all throughout this, whenever anyone looked at the cost and the pricing and how it got to the home, what you'd hear is, oh, we're working it, we're trying to make it, we're working it down, there's things we can do, and the model would change a little bit, but really what we've seen is, in that same timeline that got us to today, in June, the initial pricing from the EPC contractor was double the estimates. And so ADA had to spend with MWH, the summer and into the fall to bring that number down to the one you heard today. And as we have watched the process, the costs have stayed in about the same range. We're not sure as a utility what decisions were made, because when you cut $100 million out of a project, something goes. It's not, oh, we're just going to charge you $100 million less. You engineer, you pull things out, and so what we have is a very expensive 6B plant that really is a significant change from what the board and what the public expected from that January outline. So to say, well, where are we today and what do we do? As you work with people who are competent, they're skilled, they know what they're doing, they're trying their best, at the end of the day, you still, and you as a board, have to make the call. We're judged on our results. We're not judged on our competence, and we're not judged on how good we are to work with. And the results we have today is a project that one can't afford, that if it had come to you in January, you would have turned down. And
and a concession agreement that's expiring. So do you do three more months of what you've done for the last 12? Or do you say, we still have tools, we've learned a lot, we need to let the process that has got us 80 yards down the football field expire and figure out a way to get the rest of the way into the end zone. And our recommendation from IGU is that we've reached that point and you have to judge it on what's before you, and the deliverables aren't met and the costs are too high. And an extension invites three more months of a sole source approach rather than a abbreviated alternatives approach when you now have pricing that's competitive with other choices, and responsibly you would want to look at them. And so I didn't hear anything that I disagreed with in the earlier presentation, with possibly the outlay of how we got where we are, but it doesn't matter how we got where we are where we are. And if empirically you look at where are we today, did it meet the benchmarks we expected, and is there a high probability that we'll succeed with two or three more months of the same? I mean, I think your answer is obvious. That's my take. And with that said, we're still going to, I have a board meeting tonight. We'll go through the tolling service agreement. We understand how it is. I would disagree that all the risk has been shifted off of the utilities, but those are details and those are bargained. The big picture is, I don't think we're there and I don't think we're going to get there. Your turn.
So this project has shifted dramatically from what I've envisioned over the years and working on bringing another LNG source to Fairbanks. And I think if anybody understands the challenges on how to do it, it's Fairbanks Natural Gas. I mean, we've been doing what we're talking about today since 1998, liquefying gas, trucking gas, storing it, and distributing to customers. We recognize that it's a significant challenge to accomplish all those things and do so in a meaningful, in a way that is economic to consumers, that can result in ultimately someone buying your product. And that's really what needs to happen at the end of the day for this project. We are at a smaller facility now, 6 versus 9. The capital costs, as everybody has shared, are a challenge. We can, I'm not sure there's no blame associated with that. It's an approach that was selected, an EPC approach that shifts risk to an EPC contractor and moves them from the project developer, so it's a different approach. But from my point of view, is one that I think we recognized long ago that the project couldn't afford. So we're at a situation today where we've got the challenges are high cost of capital, high amount of capital, the high capital estimate, a lower demand profile because of the utilities situation. We've got a higher LNG price than envisioned originally with this project. We've got a challenging oil market that exists today, and one that I think when we're sitting in the room is one that we focus on probably more than any of the other parties. We've been through low oil price markets in Fairbanks. We've lost customers from our distribution system in Fairbanks, and we've been hurt financially by that. Our customers have made the choice to switch to oil. I ran into an operator of the University Power Plant on Friday night, and he reminded me that oil prices were getting very close to our gas prices and that they could be switching their one boiler that they do consume gas into oil as soon as that price dropped below gas. That's a customer that represents over 10% of our annual volumes.
So Ben, does your price of gas to that customer go up and down with the price of oil?
Our price to that customer is below what it is to the rest of our customers because they're interruptible. In the past, when we were under economic exemption, we would adjust our price based on oil. We're at a situation now where we don't have much extra margin headroom to adjust down before we're actually losing money on the sales.
So your feedstock is not adjusted to the price of oil? It's a fixed long-term contract?
Our feedstock in the cook inlet is not adjusted to oil. It's the cooking oil gas prices in the last couple of years have been disconnected from oil prices. It's a consent decree negotiated price between the state and Hilcorp that we live with today.
So what is your opinion on that option? I mean, you're pretty much tied to the post, regardless of what the price of oil does.
Yeah, in the cook inlet, there's a disconnect between the oil prices. Historically, there's contracts, when we used to negotiate contracts in the cook inlet, it was indexed off of oil. People decided that they didn't like that index anymore because oil prices were increasing and gas prices were increasing with it. So people started to say, well, let's index to Henry Hub. And that was good as long as Henry Hub was low, but when Henry Hub started to go up, people decided that they didn't like that index any longer. So we've moved away from indexing in the cook inlet really almost to a fixed price escalator contract scenario in the last number of contracts. So it's, you know, and then it's a negotiation on, you know, you need the gas. Is it a fair price in relationship to what the producers have to invest to get it to you? And it becomes that decision. So, you know, the indexing can be a catch-22, you know, depending on what market you're in and what index you pick that's most appropriate for that market. I've been criticized for a long time for indexing to oil. We were the first ones to sign a gas supply contract on the North Slope for transportation of gas off of the slope, and our contracts with ExxonMobil. And it was, I think it's publicly known that it was indexed to oil, and many criticized that fact, but for the Fairbanks market, that's what you're competing against. So it's an appropriate index. As oil goes up, your ability to provide customers is there. As it goes down, your gas price goes down. So, I mean, if you tie to Henry Hub, that's great as long as Henry Hub's low, but if it goes up in a disconnect with oil, then you're in trouble.
Sure.
Before we let Corey finish,
I wasn't done.
Oh, you were done.
Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Sorry. Everybody was looking to Corey, and I wanted to weigh in before.
So, from our point of view, we're in a different place than we had ever envisioned with this project. But it's at a place where ultimately Fairbanks still needs an LNG supply source. I struggle to find what is a better alternative. You know, the cook inlet, is that a better alternative? And I'm not sure if it ultimately is. There needs to be some changes in the cook inlet as far as gas pricing, longevity of gas supply contracts. You know, the attractiveness to the North Slope is low, relatively low gas costs and security of supply. You know, we've got Corey's got a 15-year gas supply contract. Our supply contract with Exxon is 15 years. We haven't seen those available in the cook inlet for a long time. Whether or not that changes, that could change the game. But today, it appears still that a solution out of North Slope provides probably for the longest security of supply and opportunity for lower costs. If we can solve those issues around these high capital costs and the necessary returns to a private investment. When we envisioned this project, we envisioned that the LNG plant was essentially a free pump. I'm pulled no bones about it. That was the whole reason we wanted the state involved, so that the state funds could take the risk associated with the demand growth that needed to take place in the spacing market in Fairbanks. We've moved away from that now. We've got a significant amount of private investment. We've got a significant amount of private debt that requires demand commitments to satisfy those private investments. I'm a private business. We get that. That's just the way it is. So it's that shift that has created some of the challenges as far as bringing the pricing back down to be able to meet the goals of the community, that $15. So we're torn right now with where we're at. I don't see, I'm having troubles finding a better alternative. I don't like where we sit today with the alternative that's in front of us. But with the, you know, the risks or the Golden Valley suggesting that they may be willing to take on an increased level of demand risk,
that really can mitigate some of those cost issues somewhat. We don't know what that means yet, because it's, you know, is Golden Valley going to do that out of the goodness of their heart, or are they going to expect some level of return from the space utilities in the future, and does that further challenge the pricing mechanism to us? We don't have the answer to that question today. I can tell you I'm disappointed with the number of questions that are unanswered today. We're being expected to buy gas through a BP gas supply contract that we had nothing to do with, that Golden Valley negotiated and has apparently. We haven't seen it. So from a utility that's going to be purchasing gas from the North Slope, that's a risk profile for us that we don't know what that means today, because we haven't seen it. We have recently signed a CEA that we will apparently get to see it, but we haven't today. So there's things, there's unknowns. I mean, Rick shared with you some pricing, and you know, I think he shared with you an optimistic price viewpoint on where this plant might end up. And I don't think it'll be as low as he suggested, $5 range. The things that are impacting that are, I think they're using an optimistic demand capacity volume out of that plant. They're assuming full demand out of that plant, and that the space heats have a seasonality component to them. Even if we, you know, if we agree to 3 BCF in an annual capacity, that means we're going to be taking, you know, 1.5 of that in the winter months and the other 1.5 in our shoulder months. So you need a 7 BCF plant to give you 6 BCF of saleable capacity. I think that's optimistic. You know, we talked about the property tax issue. That's a big unknown for the rate there. You've got some, I think, some other operating expense assumptions that look like they'll probably trend upwards somewhat based on these, my belief. So the $5 is, I don't believe that's a number we can hang our hat on. It's going to be bigger than that. So what does that mean at the end of the day? What recommendation am I giving you as you sit and evaluate whether or not to do an extension to MWH? I'm concerned. I'm willing to spend another 3 months trying to figure something out with this group and the utilities, but not much more than that. I think we need to get down to it and figure out whether this makes sense or not makes sense. I mean, there's just, you know, Golden Valley's desire or ability to take some extra capacity, that's a new, pretty new concept as far as that happening. So, we really only had a day or so to digest that. I can live with a 3-month extension to a concession agreement to try and figure out a way, because I don't see any better option in front of us today. Other than just, you know, the other option is for the three utilities to go back to the drawing board. I can tell you I feel like the three utilities have been making good progress on working together over the last couple of months. So that's one good thing I think has come from some of these discussions. We're getting together and we're talking more openly, and we're trying to figure out a way to satisfy the challenges in front of the interior more jointly. And that's what we still have. We have to continue to do, whether or not the 3 months is successful or not. So thank you for the opportunity to provide my thoughts.
So I have one question for you, Dan. When Jim with MWH was up here talking, we added it all up, $18 to $20.50. You mentioned about the $5 distribution, maybe a little bit low. So
$5 liquefaction.
Or liquefaction, I'm sorry, liquefaction. So what is FNG currently charging per MCF today?
So we charge our residential customers $23.35.
$23.35?
Yeah.
Okay.
Our lowest charges are to our two large interruptible customers, and that's $19.50 an MCF.
Okay.
And then there's our small commercial, large commercial are slightly less than our residential customers.
Okay. Okay. In your opinion, and I was going to ask the same thing to Bob, in your opinion, you know, everybody talked about this target of $15 back when oil was $4 a gallon for fuel. Now, obviously, it's close to $3 and maybe following. So is the $15 still the number? Does that make sense from a conversion standpoint, or is that now even too high to attract conversion, in your opinion?
So I struggle with that question very much. Obviously, focusing on oil in the short term is a bit, you know, it's hard to justify doing that. But you know, we look at markets. We look at markets as indicators, and the forward curve on oil right now is showing over the next number of years staying at 70. And so, from our point of view, there's opinions on whether oil will go back up or stay down or not. But the only thing that we rely on is what the forward curve is at any given time to help us govern our decisions at the time. So based on the forward curve, the $15 gas is still not the greatest. You don't have that 50% margin anymore. We might have a 10% margin to oil if it stays there. And that'll affect conversion rates. But the Fairbanks also has a larger driver there than in the air quality issue. And the air quality issue in Fairbanks is something that needs to be resolved in some manner. And it's viewed, I think, by most, if not all, that natural gas is really the only real solution to the issue.
Could you ever see a scenario of cooking with gas going to Fairbanks? At $15.
It cost us about $15 to get LNG to Fairbanks today.
I'm talking about burner tip price.
I mean, you could. You have to look at the quick inlet. You know, we've got some parties right now. You know, you heard REI talk earlier about their belief that there's significant reserves. We're in a high-priced environment in the quick inlet right now. What it would take would be a shift in the gas market. So we'd have to get back to an oversupply, or at least partially oversupply versus demand. You have to have the world LNG prices start coming down, because really that's, right now we're also exporting the LNG out of Cook Inlet today from the Conoco facility. So you have to see a number of those things happen to see some price in gas come down in the Cook Inlet. The benefits to the Cook Inlet are the trucking expenses are substantially less. There's existing liquefaction facility, our facility today, that could be leveraged upon. And so lower capital costs. So you could, with less state investment, have a bigger impact on the cost of liquefaction. But it's that gas cost component that would have to come down. And I can't say one way or the other whether that may or may not happen.
Okay. Bob, do you have anything to add to that? Corey?
In terms of your specific question on $15 versus the current price of oil, our look is a longer look than Dan's, because we don't have the same return requirements that are immediate year after year. So if you look at the long-term oil prices, the expectation is Fairbanks at some point is going to be faced with $4 diesel again and up into the foreseeable future. So the current depression, in our mind, answers the question, well, what do we do in the 2 years it takes to get us gas? You know, that you're seeing some respite at the individual paycheck level right now from this low cost. It slows our growth. So more than dropping our conversion, our model showed it slowed the conversion rate across a 10 or 12 year period instead of a 6 year period. But you get to almost the same point, you know, maybe within 10% of where you were before, just across a longer period of time. And one of the things that I had meant to add is, you heard from Mayor Hopkins today. He's come to our last two meetings to hammer us about that same thing, about the cost of gas. You may hear from the mayor of North Pole. He drugged me in and talked to me about that $15 gas, and I think he put together a resolution that you may see that that we're not just making this up. This is a community belief set that we need to do something about the price of oil, and what we're trying to do with this project is leverage low-cost gas for a period of time till the pipeline comes. And so if you go from $4 oil and you drop down to $15 per MCF at the equivalent of $2 oil, and then a big gas line comes, then you are looking at gas competitive with what you're seeing in Anchorage. So in the long term, we want that stair step to continue. You can't do it without a distribution system. And with pipe in the ground, our sense is you're going to have to be in that $15 range in order to pay back the commitments we expect to make to you. And so we see it as more challenging, that 15, but in the longer run, you know, it's still going to pay. And that's the models we put together. And the other thing I wanted to mention is Golden Valley's willingness to step up and say, out of the three we have the most capacity, truly is a potential portion of any solution. And it's a question of price, and what do you lock that price in at across a 30-year period? Not is it a problem. It's a solution to something the three of us have struggled with since about August.
So would you say that would help your conversion if it goes from 6 to 12 years, having that demand capacity taken by Golden Valley because of the pricing that helps mitigate a risk for you?
Yeah, the math on how it worked is it brings in as low a possible liquefaction price in year two or three of the project instead of waiting to year six. Okay. And so it makes a huge difference in the early years, and there's risk that goes with that help.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say without Golden Valley's willingness to step up and take the excess demand that exists in the early years, or pay for the excess demand that exists in the early years, that we wouldn't be moving forward with this project as a mission today. I couldn't see the pricing getting to a scenario where it made any sense. So it's really understanding what does that commitment mean to the space heat utilities, which we don't really know today.
Corey?
Yeah, this is not where Golden Valley wants to be. Yeah, I'm paying it to be. And I didn't even have to go. How many B can we sign Ada out for?
And that's where Ada was, at least in the original design of this project. It was the $125 million assets and $57.5 million of grant funds on a $170 million capital budget on the North Slope. Mm-hmm. So it was primarily, and there was some private capital, at least from our view, being envisioned, but very little. So it was the state taking the risk associated with the space heat demand market growth that was necessary. Because of the higher capital, because it requires money from elsewhere, private investment, private debt and stuff, and a desire to shift some of the funds to other pieces of the supply chain, mm-hmm. It's created the challenges.
Okay.
A few comments, and I want to echo some things that Dan said. I don't think for us in the interior this is just about price. Price is extremely important to get this project to go, but it's about bringing gas to a community so we can have a cleaner community, so that the military will bring their soldiers to the interior of Alaska to live where there's healthy air. It's about economic development, so the developers can bring in the commercial development so that we'll have growth and development in the interior. You know, there's a lot of moving parts to this, which is extremely important. And we talk about that at Golden Valley, about the community and what this community needs. And this community needs natural gas. There's no doubt about it. So I think when we sit around here, that's an easy yes for everyone. Everyone's looking about who's going to take what risks in this, but I think there's a more fundamental reality that we need to kind of take a look at, and is that this project is expensive. It was underfunded from the legislature. We hear that all the time. There was not enough money to make this work. I talked to our legislators last night at a legislative briefing, and And they nodded, so the governor said, if you need more money, come back. Well, the world's changed.
Careful with your asshole, right?
Yeah. Different governor, different economics. And I know this project is difficult. I know there's going to have to be some out-of-the-box work by MWH. And we've talked about those over the last 3 days, things pulling rabbits out of hats. I'm not sure when I heard Bob speak, if he says he's done. If IGU has said we're done, we can go back and we can do a press release that IGU killed this project. I'm not sure he said that. What I've heard Dan say and what I've said is, we know this is tough, but we don't see anything else coming. I had a number of members show up in 8 a.m. Sunday morning board meeting for Golden Valley. Try that for a time frame. And to say, you know, kill this project. And everyone had different agendas, but not one of them said, and here's what you should do. There is nothing else on the table. We got Westpac here today, actually. They're $14.50, they say, from the Cook Inlet. They don't have their gas contract yet. They're going to have it by the end of December. I've got people saying bring propane in. That's equivalent to $17 an MCF. And the longer term, it would be cheaper. We got a lot of people circling, but we don't have anything as concrete as what we have here. And, yes, this isn't perfect, but it still needs to be worked on. And I hope IGU will say we will still work with you on making this project work if this board so is inclined to give the extension that I hope you do give.
Okay. Questions from the board?
We're going to have an executive session. We're going to invite these three. Yeah.
Dan, would you talk a little bit about the consent agreement, and do you have an opinion on what it means on 1118 in regard to, and I know you're not under the consent agreements, but you see the landscape of 1118 as the price of gas out of Cook Inlet?
So we do buy gas today from Hillcorp for our liquefaction facility, and it is under consent decree.
Right.
So we're buying the gas under the same terms as pretty much all the other utilities in the Inlet right now. From my understanding is that the utilities have been extending those contracts on a year basis, so the contracts that start 1/1/18 are at similar pricing to consent decree, you know, slight escalation from where it was before. So we're seeing the trending of the prices, at least through those mechanisms, being about where they are today with escalation for index escalation, 2%, 3% a year. I don't see a major shift to that happening, at least in the next year or so, until we see, you know, some potentials we've got is that development rate that's coming into the inlet that we're unsure of how much gas that really means comes in all at once. That could have a market changing. It could change the market significantly. We have announced recently that we signed an agreement to sell our liquefaction facility to Hillcorp. As part of that sale, we signed a 10-year LNG sales agreement with Hillcorp at $15 with a 2% escalator after the first 2 years. So from that point of view, for our existing market potential, pretty much fixes prices into that current Cook Inlet pricing scenario. They are interested in expanding that facility and expanding and providing more LNG to the markets in the interior and others, like they told us. It's most likely they're looking at that similar pricing structure then.
So the notion that on 1/1/18, when the consent agreement runs out, that it'll then allow the free market to set the gas price rather than through the court, that'll drive down prices?
I'm not sure I've bought into that notion that it will drive down prices. There's a number of key issues that have to happen for the market to react that way. I think there needs to be a greater level of supply in the inlet again. And you know, we talk about reserves, but there's still, in order to get to those reserves, there's substantial capital investment required to get there. You've got that issue, and you've still got the fact that LNG prices in the export markets are still fairly
fairly high, so you've got a ConocoPhillips facility that can export some of those excess volumes and afford to pay a robust price for the feedstock for that. So those two things have to change, I think, to see that some market pressures down on propane like gas prices again.
That helps a lot. Thank you. Second question is, and Corey's worried about light bulbs, and Dan are worried about heat in the kitchen. And so the heat in the kitchen, folks, so my take is that this precipitous drop in energy, and all of a sudden you wake up one morning, and just as I did, gas, and I'm a proud customer of gas, all of a sudden my gas price is the same as the oil. So I looked at that and I said, what was driving this 2 years ago and driving it with us a year ago was the fact that we needed to get something done and something done quickly. So would you agree that this has taken off that economic pressure on the family because it's a dollar either to gas or to oil? We can't help the fellow that's cutting his own wood for now. But so that sort of goes away, and this whole project now is driven by altruism, somebody that just wants to help. It's driven by convenience of gas that they put on the commercials, and they're right, I'm a customer. We love it. And the third one is, of course, air quality. And that's really, those are the three things that drive this project now. I guess my point is that we can just take our foot off the throttle and get away from the word quickly. We don't have to do it quickly. We have to, no question whatsoever, we still have to do it. We don't have that drive driven by the family that wants to throw their keys on the table like we were seeing 2 or 3 years ago. Am I take right on that?
I think partially yes, and maybe partially I differ from your opinion a little bit. I've always been a little bit cynical on the equation that we were trying to achieve from the beginning. You know, the quickest, most people, lowest costs. In my experience, that's not a mathematical equation that ever works. There's something that gives. Time gives, the cost or cost go up to meet your timeline, or you start to reduce scope. We've seen both of those things in this project. We've gone from 9 BCF, which limits people, to 6 BCF so we can reduce costs. We've seen the timeline extend as they've tries to refine the EPC contract and those types of things. So, I think that we were setting ourselves up somewhat for failure with that equation to begin with, but that's my personal view. But I viewed this project to a great extent as an insurance policy for the interior and to provide some stability to be able to look forward. Even though the oil prices have dropped now, and it does and has over the years caused us to back off the throttle and say we don't really have to worry about these things today, it doesn't provide for the family, the homeowner in Fairbanks, that price certainty moving forward. They're still remembering that they paid $4 last winter, and they're still very much concerned about paying $4 next winter. Whereas if they have a long-term forecast of what their energy prices are going to be over the next 15, 20 years, it provides stability and allows for people to plan and to live. Reactionary to $4 oil when you're paying $1,000 a month to heat your home and then plus another $300 for electricity, that's a hard thing to do for most people. So although I think that we have some temporary relief, we're not in a position where you're having to make bad decisions to meet a timeline, I think what's important for me is that we don't totally lose focus, because at the end of the day, I think we'll probably be back into a high oil environment at some point. We still have these environmental issues we need to resolve sooner than later, and we need to have some stability looking forward.
That parallels probably better said what I said earlier in terms of our long view. The one thing you keep in mind, really having slipped to the end of the third quarter of 16, we're talking have on already lost the 16-17 heating season. So we're three heat seasons away from gas providing relief under the current scenario. And so the expectation that yes, you're going to build that back up across a three-year period is people are going to be nervous they're going to get the $1,000 bill again. The other is the work that you've done with Dan being able to build this summer and next summer in advance of the supply and us looking at starting ours out, getting that pipe in the ground to take advantage of the gas supply that comes together is a big piece toward people believing, yes, indeed, this is going to happen. We packed the Hotel North Pole. We've had three open houses, and it's been standing room only. We have people come in and talk about conversions. And there's a buildup of there is a solution on the way that's saying, well, now oil is low again. We're not going to continue working as hard until oil gets high again. I would not want to go that far.
Any other board members questions? All right, thank you. So next up is I'll take a motion for executive session.
Sure. You want them to go over transportation?
That's right. Yeah.
Let me kick it off, and I'll turn it over to Dan. Part of the three of us putting together this term sheet for the trucking. Fairbanks Natural Gas, Dan Britton, has said that their organization would kind of manage the trucking consortium. We are anticipating, hopefully, that there's $10 million of funding from ADA for that consortium. Capital, we talked about additional capital outlays each organization has to put into it. It'll be an equally owned consortium, equal partners, that's run and operated by Fairbanks Natural Gas and Dan. It's pretty preliminary, but we kind of made some basic decisions. And Dan's got the knowledge on the trucking, so Dan, you want to add anything else? Or?
I think this goes along to the point where, at least from my point of view, the utilities are having good discussions to recognize the areas that we need to work together on to the benefit of the ratepayers in Fairbanks. One of those is the trucking consortium. It makes no sense for each one of us to be running our own trucking operation. It makes no sense for each one of us to have spare trailers to back up for our needs. So I think the group recognized that. I think we've got a structure in, at least at a high level, that can work for all the three that we've talked about so far. But we've got a lot of details to get through that we have it finalized, but it lays a framework at least for where we can have a single entity that operates the trailer fleet, has a single contract with, or single or multiple contracts with trucking providers, or if necessary, does its own, if that's what it takes to make the project work. And then this provides the service to the users as needed. So I think we've made some good progress there.
Okay. Good. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. So, Jeff is complete. I'll look for a motion for the executive session.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the board enter an executive session to discuss confidential financial information and negotiations related to the Interior Energy Project.
No objections. We'll go to...